Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the newest episode of the Thinking Jew podcast, where we dive deep into Torah and Judaism, always uncovering new layers of depth we did not realize was there beforehand. I'm your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel from Richardson, Texas, and as always, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to reach out with any questions, comments, future topic requests. You can always reach me at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. This week's Torah portion discusses one of the most important experiences in Jewish history, and probably in world history, the story of the Jews arriving at Mount Sinai and receiving the Torah. So I think if I were to ask you, what was the great significance of the Mount Sinai experience? How would you answer? So if you're like most people, I think what you would answer is, we got the Torah. This is where God gave over the guidebook of life, the instruction manual for life, to the Jewish nation. And that is 100% correct. That is very true. And it's a super important part of the Sinai experience. But during our time today, I want to take a few minutes to discuss more of the general experience of Sinai and why it's such a crucial event in Jewish history. So for starters, if you ever look in the very first page after morning services in most prayer books, and most, if you're using the classic Hebrew English art scroll one, it's going to be on page 176 and 177. There's actually a Torah commandment to remember six specific events every single day. And this is codified in the commentaries on the Code of Jewish Law and the Magen Avraham, that they bring down from Kabbalistic sources that there's actually a reason to say these verses every single day. And if you look at the second one of the six, it's called Zechiras Maimer Har Sinai, which literally means remembering the standing at Mount Sinai. And I think it's interesting to note that it's not called remembering receiving the Torah at Mount Sinai or remembering the Ten Commandments. It's called remembering Maimer Har Sinai, the standing, the experience of being present at Mount Sinai. And we read in this two verses. These verses are actually not from our parsha. They're actually from later in the Torah in Deuteronomy when Moses is recalling to the Jewish nation the experience at Sinai. And I'll read you Art Scrolls' translation of these verses. This is in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9 and 10. Only beware and guard yourself carefully, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they stray from your heart all the days of your life. And you are to make them known to your children and to your children's children the day you stood before Hashem, your God, at Sinai. So it's clear in these verses itself that the message we're giving over to our children is the day you stood before Hashem, your God, at Sinai, standing there in front of Hashem with Hashem at Sinai. And it doesn't even mention anywhere in this verse what happened at Sinai. It doesn't mention anywhere here that we got the Torah and how impactful that was on our national history. The focus is just that we were at Mount Sinai with God. So what exactly is this? What is this depth here? What's the reason why we're celebrating so much as being at Mount Sinai with God? Why isn't the focus the Torah, the instruction manual for life, like we would have thought it should be? So I think the starting point is actually a Mishnah, the very last Mishnah in the tractate of Tainus. And the Mishnah quotes a verse from Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs. It's chapter 3, verse 11. The verse reads as follows. Tzenu re'ena benos tzion b'melech Shlomo, which literally means, go forth, daughters of Zion, and gaze upon King Solomon, upon the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding and on the day of the gladness of his heart. And the Mishnah goes on to explain what are these special days referring to. What is the day of his wedding? Says the Mishnah, Yom Chasunaso Ze Matan Torah. This is referring to the day of receiving the Torah. So we find that the Sinai experience was much more than just getting the Torah. It was actually the wedding. It was the union of God and the Jewish people. So let's look a little deeper at what exactly this metaphor of a wedding really represents. What happens at a wedding? If you think about it, the bride and groom, they're under the chuppah, and what they're really doing there is they're committing to joining on a mission together, building and constructing a house together as part of a singular greater mission. It's no longer about me anymore. It's about us. It's about the bigger process, not just the individual anymore. That's really the greater union that's occurring when two people get married. Now, granted, it's commonplace, and many actually even say that this Sinai experience is the source of the Jewish custom that after the husband and wife get married, the husband gives his wife a present. And so too here, when the Jewish people get married to God, God being the groom and the Jewish nation being the bride, God gives them the Torah, which is the most precious gift he has. But when a husband and wife think back to their wedding day, they're hopefully not thinking about the great gift that they gave each other, that the husband gave the wife. They're thinking about the actual relationship itself and how meaningful and great that moment was in joining them together on this path in life. So if we now were to analyze the greater Sinai experience, what was so memorable? What was so special about the experience at Mount Sinai? It's that God was the groom, the nation of Israel was the bride, and the Torah, really even more than a fine piece of jewelry, the Torah was really the equivalent of the ksuba, the marriage contract. And the greatness of the moment was that we joined together and we agreed to commit to each other, that no matter what happens in life and no matter what happens in history, the Jewish people are going to be here to bring out God's mission in the world, and God is going to be here for the Jewish people as well. So now let's go one level deeper and try to see how this concept of union and marriage really manifested itself in the Sinai experience. When a couple gets married, they're really committing themselves to sharing every part of themselves with the other person. Their deepest, most intimate secrets, they need to be entrusted to your spouse, or else you're hiding something and that really inhibits the relationship. Both sides need to be completely open to allow the other person to access their world and to really connect in the deepest, most intimate way possible. And that's what really bonds people together. Now, by humans, we normally do this in the physical sense. We do this in an emotional sense, in a psychological sense. We open ourselves up and we share ourselves with our spouses. When we discuss this in terms of God, it's a whole different level. What does it look like when God reveals himself, when he opens up and creates the most deepest, intimate aspect of himself and expresses that to his lover, to the Jewish nation? They're exposed to such a magnificent level of spirituality that it's unparalleled in the history of the world. When you read about certain midrashim that describe how the Sinai experience went, so one famous midrash says, Rabbi Avohu says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that when Hashem came and gave the Torah, no bird screeched, no fowl flew, no cow mooed. Even the Ophanim, the wheel angels, they didn't flap their wings. The Seraphim, the fire angels, they didn't chant Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh anymore. The sea didn't roar. The world was astonishingly or deafeningly silent. Nothing made a sound. A second really explicit verse in the Torah, in this week's Torah portion, Exodus chapter 20, verse 15, it says that the Jewish people were able to see the sounds of the commandments. And as somewhat of a small aside, if you haven't heard of this concept before, you can Google it. It's a very fascinating article on it. But there's a concept called synesthesia, and it's basically describing this exactly. It's a neurological condition that basically is similar to this concept of seeing sounds. A synesthete experiences what most people experience with one sense. They experience that same thing using their other senses as well. Kind of the classic examples of this is seeing numbers with certain colors, or an example of it would be seeing sound. It's experiencing what's normally experienced with one sense, experiencing in a different sense. And it's actually, according to the articles I've read, it takes place in around 2 to 4% of the population, which is interesting because I don't know offhand of anyone that I've ever met that has it. And if anyone here listening does experience this, I would love for you to email me again, thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com, and to hear more about it. But the concept exists. And I think what's interesting about it in our context of the Mount Sinai experience, both the concept of the world becoming deafeningly still and this concept of experiencing it using all of our senses in new ways, both of these things really come back to a bigger picture of unity. And this is really how Rav Kook explains it. He says that when you're opened up to the Creator's perspective, when we become closer and closer, when Hashem, as the groom, allows us in a more deep, intimate way to experience His world, then we can see the world in a perspective of unity where nothing else exists. Nothing can flap, nothing can move, nothing can make noise. There is nothing. It's just one big shining light, one eminence of God that exists in the world. And that whole body experience of that is really what the Sinai experience was all about. So if I come back to you now and I ask again, what was the highlight of the Mount Sinai experience? What's our goal in transmitting this to our children, to the next generation, of why was Sinai so important? What really happened was this was the union. This was where we married Hashem and we agreed, we're going to work on your mission together. We're going to join together and build a house, build a world together of godliness. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Thinking Jew Podcast. As always, I can be contacted at thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. I hope everybody has an amazing rest of the week and a great Shabbos.